This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
In this hour, we are joined in studio by David Heilberg of Dygert Wright Hobbs and Heilberg. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. Dave is a defense attorney, started out as a prosecutor, and now he is known locally, most relevantly recently, as defending the 13-year-old in last week's appeal trial, and your client was acquitted last week of all charges of anything, of having anything to do with the bomb plot case here in Albemarle County.
That's correct.
And we wanted to have you in the studio to get some insight from behind the scenes of this case. We have a number of folks in the community who've had a lot of questions, and you know, from what I hear, the phone calls I get, people still don't have a lot of answers, and they're doing what free citizens do in a free society. They're asking questions about the people who have power in their society. How are you exercising this authority and doing, in my opinion, and I only represent my own opinion here, they're doing what they should be doing as members of a democratic society. Why did you do that? Why are our police doing this? Why did they do that? Not accusing anybody of anything, but just asking questions. And that's what we want to do today. And, of course, I invite you all to join the conversation. Dave Heilberg, our guest today on Charlottesville Right Now. Dave, I want to start with the obvious question, I think, just straight up. Was there an injustice in this case, specifically in, and I know you can only really speak for the case that you represented, the young man that you represented, which was one of the four, but beginning with that case, and then perhaps your opinion about the whole, the other cases, because they found no conspiracy in your client's case, and what does that say about the others? So was there an injustice here?
I would say until the jury verdict came back, my client and his family felt that was very much the case, but felt happy and vindicated that in the end we got the right result.
And let me just ask you for your general feelings about this case and your take on what happened going back to the first press conference when the police came forward and said that they had averted a Columbine.
Well, I don't like to comment in the press at all when I have pending cases. Adult or juvenile. And I think about the only thing I was pretty piqued and upset at some point with all the hoopla and publicity while this trial was going on. And I think I was quoted in general as saying that the press conference and press conferences were extremely inappropriate, particularly because we had 13-year-old kids being charged and that it attracted way too much attention and created too high expectations in the public that this was really a serious and dangerous plot.
Yeah, and I think correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't a prosecutor agree with that as well? Defense or prosecutor's attorney don't really like for the police to have press conferences.
I think that's right. If anything, I know that Mr. Camblos and his office discouraged them from attracting such attention. There's some ethical rules that govern attorneys, but one reason that we shouldn't be attracting attention while a case is pending is that it can poison the well, so to speak, or prejudice the venari, which means the jury or the jury pool.
Right. Dave Heilberg is our guest. He was the defense attorney for the young man acquitted last week in the bomb plot case. Let's go back to the very beginning of this. The police basically found out about something. They pulled in roughly a couple of dozen kids, middle school and high school kids. In how many of those instances that you know of, and I know you've seen transcripts or video copies of all of these interviews, in how many of those was there an attorney or a parent present in the room?
Well, I can't say that I watched every single interview, but I probably watched almost every one. And from beginning to end, you even have to fast forward when you see large gaps. But for virtually every child interviewed, they kept them waiting for half an hour, sometimes more, just sitting in a room being videotaped, unbeknownst to them. Then there would be questioning. And then it would end, and they would sit for a while longer before somebody came in, usually the police with their parents, to tell them that they were free to go, except, of course, for the first three young men who were arrested.
Right. So there, in none of the interviews, was there an attorney present or was there a parent present in the room?
Not one.
And as an attorney who's been practicing for nearly 30 years in the Commonwealth, is that standard way of doing business for the police, or is this unique to Albemarle County? I mean, I'm clueless. Is that?
I would say It's unique to Albemarle County in my experience. I think the police have gotten away from, in recent years, allowing parents to be in on the interviews with their children. It used to be required. It became more optional depending on circumstances. And now I think they consciously don't feel like they're going to get the truth from children with their parents in the room. And so this is what it's come to.
Which arguably you're more likely to get the truth from a child if the parent is in the room. I mean, you could argue that round and square.
I think that's, you know, it probably depends on the circumstances, but I think for first offenders and younger teens, as my client was, he'd never, I think, been in a police department at all for anything like this. Neither had his parents. And so you're more likely to get the truth probably with the parents in the room in those circumstances.
Yeah. And of course, we should point out that Delegate Toscano and Delegate Rob Bell were on the downtown mall last night. And as reported in the Progress today, they both agreed that this was something that would most likely be looked at in the General Assembly this year. Whether or not we will see legislation as a result, who knows? But your feelings on that?
I think it's great. Of course, I know both gentlemen because we all practice together, and I haven't spoken with either of them, but I would strongly urge that there be some reform in this area, particularly because there are collateral consequences for children that you don't have for adults. Even if you're not charged with a crime, but some misconduct comes to light, you might be suspended or even expelled from school.
When your motivation was just to go down, a very honest motivation to go down and just help the police. If there's a problem in my neighborhood, I want to help you.
Absolutely. And that actually was the motivation of my client and his parents.
And it, of course, as we know, it came back to bite him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we want to talk about that with some more specifics. Dave Heilberg is our guest, defense attorney here in our community. We've got another Dave on the phone. Dave, hang with me on the phone. We're going to take a very quick break. You're listening to Charlottesville right now. We continue our discussion with Dave Heilberg, defense attorney for the 13-year-old boy who was found not guilty last week in the U.S. Circuit Court here in Charlottesville, Albemarle, of having anything to do with the bomb plot case. Dave, tell us about the young man's arrest, because there was a lot of us still, and before we get that, let me quickly go to the phones. Dave is on the line from Albemarle. Dave, go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I just have one question, and just wanted to know, was the gentleman that was charged, was he acquitted because of something the police did, or was he acquitted because he was truly not guilty?
That's a great question. What exactly was the well, the jury doesn't get up and really explain their thinking, do they?
They don't, and I really haven't talked to anybody on the jury, and I usually don't for quite a while if I do at all. And all I know is what was reported in the press, and they felt that there, what I remember from that is there was no smoking gun, and the Commonwealth left room for reasonable doubt, and that's about all they've said.
Yeah. When this 13-year-old boy was arrested, a lot of people have sort of scratched their heads. Why was he arrested at school, number one, taken to a police station, and then his parents were not allowed to see him for this was on Wednesday, until Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Which I can tell you, if the government took my kid and then put him in a jail and said, no, you're not going to see him,
mm-hmm.
I would go nuts.
Well, I think there was a confluence of events that were unfortunate, but I also feel on the part of the detectives that were handling this case, and I think limited to them, the way they chose to handle it did not work out well for my client. He and his parents came in voluntarily. They voluntarily turned in his computer about 2 days later. Another 2 weeks go by. They're interviewing all the kids at the school and getting all kinds of conflicting statements until one kid, who as it turns out was the kid had been in a fight with my kid the year before, gives a florid statement in the middle of February about what my client said. He had admitted there was this conspiracy, et cetera, with lots of detail. Well, keeping some perspective, by the 15th of February or thereabouts, this had been all over the news. And I think even more detailed than the news was, I'll call it the kid grapevine. Everybody in the high schools and everybody in the middle schools had been discussing it. Everybody knew who had been pulled out of school. And so everybody knew who it was, and that by the middle of February, a kid can name who was arrested and who else was in this quote-unquote plot. was not surprising. And it was after that kid was interviewed that Detective Pistolka got a petition to arrest my client. Now, there's no requirement that you be allowed to turn yourself in or in some way cooperate. But frankly, unless you think a murder is about to be committed or somebody is about to flee, there's no reason to just go and arrest somebody in a public place wherever they might be. And since the parents had cooperated and gone in to testify, there was no reason to think they wouldn't have turned him in or surrendered him to be served with the petition at the police department or anywhere, or that he couldn't have been arrested at home or not in a public place. Instead, they get it during the day. They go directly to the school. They pull him out of class in front of other kids, and he's paraded, perhaps with a coat over his handcuffs, a 13-year-old.
Yeah, he said they did put a coat over his handcuffs.
Right, but everybody knew what was going on.
That's a telltale sign for I've got handcuffs on.
That's right. And so he's brought before the court. Well, we have a detention hearing the very next day, and the parents call me, and I come down there with them immediately.
But we should point out, even before then, though, the mother went down to the police station,
mm-hmm.
asked to see him, and they said, no.
No.
You can't see your son.
That's right. That absolutely happened. They took him to detention overnight. And then the next day, the court sits, we have a hearing. Well, I could see steam coming out of the ears of my parents because a good case was made to release this young man in the care of his parents. He was 13 years old. He had never been in trouble before. The parents were professionals, self-employed. They could actually be with him 24/7 under house arrest because of the flexibility of their jobs. And the case seemed a little shaky until Detective Pistolka testifies under oath that they tampered with the computer that they turned in a day later than expected.
The parents did.
Well, that was what he told the judge. That's where the steam came out of their ears. Nothing of the kind happened, they said. And in fact, Detective Pistolka did not testify that way again at trial. And the expert that we called said that, in fact, that wasn't the case. But at that crucial juncture, the judge is saying, I have parents who would tamper with evidence. I can't trust them to have their own kid at home. So he's detained until the case is over in that lower level.
So it's what, is it Sergeant Pistolka? Or
I think he's Corporal Pistolka.
Corporal Pistolka said under oath regarding the computer evidence that kept this young man unable to get bond or and away from his parents during this whole thing.
That's correct.
And then later, as I understand it, he never came forward again to testify that way. Was he lying or was he mistaken or do we know?
Well, we don't know. But it wasn't truthful. And in fact, as it came out in his testimony later, he was expecting to find things on the computer and he found nothing. And so he thinks there's tampering because he finds nothing. Well, consistently, there was nothing. This young man was not communicating with anybody by email or otherwise about any of this, about anything.
So Pistolka assumed guilty. He assumed he was guilty and he was going to find the evidence to prove he was guilty.
His MySpace homepage, the kids put a little thing, was different than the one we saw for the oldest child, which had some disturbing things on it and prompted, understandably, that the police had some concerns.
Sure, sure.
My client's webpage, I think the title was Cars, Girls, My Life. And there was nothing at all on there that you wouldn't expect to see from a 13-year-old kid.
It wasn't guns, Columbine, death.
No.
Or nothing like it.
Exactly.
We're talking with Dave Halberg. He was the defense attorney for the young man acquitted last week. Well, then, Dave, why did they charge your client? Why was he even on the list of these kids?
Well, best I can tell, Detective Jenkins, Sergeant Jenkins, testified at the trial we recently had that she didn't transform my client from a witness to a suspect until Detective Pistolka told her at some time before his arrest that the computer had been tampered with. And it was at that point their focus changed. They started calling in 24 other kids to try to tie him into the conspiracy.
Tie your client in
mm-hmm.
to the conspiracy. And before we go to break, I just have to ask you, all these four were charged with conspiracy. But legally, doesn't, you know, just by the legal definition of conspiracy, doesn't that supposed to include an agreement among parties involved?
Absolutely. And from what I remember about the coverage at the beginning, which was even before I became involved, there was computer information. And other than some MySpace postings, and MySpace, from what I've been told, is more or less a bulletin board with a possibility of some communication between people, there would be evidence of that kind. And in fact, there was none, particularly for my client.
So it wasn't involved in that. And do you think, and again, right before we go to break here, do you think, was there a conspiracy here, Dave?
No. Certainly my client, whose only connection was the other age 13 boy who was his good friend, there was no proof of conspiracy between him. And we don't know from the jury's verdict, but from what I know, it doesn't look like there was a conspiracy between the others.
You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. We're going to take a break for some local news, and we'll be back. We welcome you to join the conversation here at 977-1070. We're talking with our guest Dave Heilberg of Dygert, Wright, Hobbs & Heilberg, the defense attorney in last week's, at this point, well-known case that acquitted one of the 13-year-olds involved in the bomb pot case. Before we went to break, Dave, we were talking about Gary Pastolka with the Albemarle County Police Department, and you were pointing out that it was Pastolka's testimony under oath regarding computer evidence that really sort of made things very difficult for your client early on. That's really what prevented bond. It's what prevented his parents from even seeing him and made it really difficult. And yet Pastolka never came forward again with that evidence, never testified again with that. We never heard that there was any computer evidence that was actually there.
That's correct. And in fact, we had a transcript of the first trial, and I looked very carefully at it, and it was obvious that there was no evidence even then on the computer.
Yeah. Is there – what do we know? Is that – I'm just wondering what we know about Gary Pastolka in regards to this –
I obviously had a problem with his credibility because of what happened at the detention hearing. And so we did something unusual because it's confidential, but we subpoenaed his personnel file. And in 27 years of doing this, I've never done that with a police officer. And I think in part I was motivated by some personal experience with him, professional experience, and actually his reputation. And so before the trial began, the judge disclosed to us that in his record, he had been disciplined by the county police for untruthfulness in the past. And so there was an issue about whether we could, if he were called as a witness by the Commonwealth, ask him about it. The standard would be that it was an unadjudicated act of perjury. That would have, I think, crossed the threshold where in front of a jury you can ask about it. We never got there because the Commonwealth didn't call him as a witness. And so that's an undecided issue, but it raises real concerns that a police officer is disciplined by his own department for untruthfulness.
And especially this police officer was the one who, if it's my understanding, was the one that was in charge of, did most of these interviews with these children.
Well, we had a real problem with that. Not so much they did the interviews, but he is the so-called expert or computer expert for Albemarle County Police. And that's just a conflict of role. You can't be both an expert and an investigator. We have people that come from the state lab in drug or chemical cases. Even the evidence technicians don't know anything about a case. They just handle the evidence and tell you what they know about handling it. But here he had interviewed 20 or more of these children, and it was children who were the witnesses.
With no parents and no lawyers.
Correct. And then started doing all the forensic examinations of the computer. Came out for the first time very clearly during the most recent trial because we had to call him as a witness for our chain of evidence and about some of the things he did, that he was not certified in the software, which is called NCASE, which is the standard forensic software, because I think he said it was too expensive or too difficult to get it, and so the department had not financed that.
So Albemarle County Police Department's computer expert isn't certified to do the work that he's doing.
Well, at least on this software, which is, I guess, the gold standard or the usual software that is used by law enforcement and, frankly, any computer forensic evaluator to analyze data.
Let's go to the phones. Robert's on the line from Crozet. Robert, thank you so much for the call.
Sure, yeah. I had a question. How did the police come to target this child as someone who might know something or be involved? How did they, I mean, they didn't have the computer, I mean, I assume they didn't have computer since that computer thing came in later. How did they know to pick out this kid out of that school and bring, I mean, how did they know that he might know something, you know, about all this and
he was
be intimately involved, possibly? How did they know?
I'm not sure. Certainly, the young man who was described as the hero and knew the oldest of the teenagers had never heard of and didn't know of any connection to my client. The best I could figure is that the other age 13 defendant, who alphabetically, their last names would have to be right next to each other in any roll call. They had lockers next to each other. They shared the same homeroom. He was well known as his good friend. And so I can't think of any other reason other than that he was very good friends with the other kid who had been previously developed and who also happened to be a neighbor of this same kid with the disturbed thoughts.
And it could have been as simple as asking the other 13-year-old, who have you mentioned this to?
That's correct.
And then, I mentioned it to my other friend here. Well, let's talk to him as well.
But it's unclear, but there's lots of reasons to think why he came up, but we don't know for sure. Certainly, he was not mentioned as being involved at any time before he was interviewed.
The Commonwealth's attorney, Jim Camblos, has been getting a lot of grief from callers to this program, CivilNews.com on the blog. A lot of folks posting to that site are upset. Jim has said, well, you know, we would be derelict in our duties if we didn't prosecute all of these kids involved. And is saying something to the effect, well, the system works. Of course, it works if you can afford an appeals trial in this case. What's your feelings on that?
You know, I have mixed feelings about this, but I also feel that the Commonwealth Attorney's Office was somewhat victimized by the cards they were dealt in this situation. There was shoddy police work. There wasn't completely credible police work in this particular case with these officers. And it's sad because the vast majority of police officers, 99% or more, don't do this, that they do good work and they're truthful. Here they're dealing with something that was a little less than what it should have been. And then the next thing you know, and I think the Commonwealth Attorney would not have wanted this, ethically they couldn't allow it, was that there's press conferences about all of this immediately. And so the whole thing got out of control and took on its own life. And then they were stuck with, how do you protect the community? Everybody would want. There's not a person who can't say the police shouldn't be aggressive to protect our children in the schools from dangerous people.
Absolutely.
And so here he can't appear to be soft on that kind of thing, but what he was given by the Alamo County Police, these particular officers, was not what it should have been.
We have an article today, and there's a lot of press about this in today's Progress and in The Hook this week. Great article in The Hook. And, of course, Liesl Novak continues her fantastic work in The Daily Progress. I would suggest everybody get a copy of that today. It's interesting. The very last line in Liesl's article today says, according to statements made in court August 1st, prosecutors also appear to be clamping down on information coming from one of the children's fathers, having filed a motion against him for revealing information to school officials about his own son's case. And in The Hook, this same man is quoted as saying, I don't want to say anything because I feel intimidated. There's been accusations of intimidation on the part of the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office against the families that are involved in this. Have you seen that?
I would say they more feel intimidated than they are being intimidated. That's why I said that they kind of got dealt a bad hand of cards, because here there's been all this publicity about something there should be no publicity about. And then because of the confidentiality statutes, they're doing what they can in their power to protect confidentiality. And if it had been confidential, as it should have been from the start, particularly for the 13-year-olds, we wouldn't have that issue.
I'd like to, if I could, just play some of the clips. We're talking with Dave Heilberg. He was the defense attorney in last week's appeals trial for the...
It was just his face showed shock the moment it was said. Well, you can spin that any way you want. Anybody would be in shock having been told that for any reason, but I heard people try to spin that as, oh, that betrayed some kind of guilty conscience. It was nothing of the sort. It was just absolutely inappropriate to do that at the end. And I think it was emblematic of how my client and his family felt about this, that they were somewhat victimized by the system.
Yeah, and of course, Howard, the young man's father who was in here last week and talked, and folks, you can listen to that interview at SevillePodcast.com. I asked him point blank, were you lied to at any point in this process? And he said, innumerable times. I can't begin to list to you the amount of times, whether it was the police or the prosecutors, outright lied to me. Can you flesh that out for us?
You know, I can't comment on that. I suppose you would feel that way. If you're not used to the system, how things are handled, you would feel that way. You would feel you were being persecuted, as one of the other parents said. I would say that that wasn't true in my experience, but I don't think they would lie to me. You would just feel, knowing in your heart, that something didn't happen, your son said something didn't happen, and then everybody says that it did, that you were being lied to in some way by the system, but I'm not sure exactly what he was referencing.
Well, I am. He's specifically referencing the fact that the police were saying they had all of this evidence when they didn't.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in general, and of course, specifically at that detention hearing when they had tampered with the computer and that sort of thing. So, yes, overall, if you mean, was there a big lie that there was some kind of a grand conspiracy out there and their child was a part of it? Absolutely.
Dave Heilberg is with Dygert, Wright, Hobbs, and Heilberg. He was the defense attorney in last week's trial, and I shouldn't say last week, but also throughout. And you had a co-counsel that also we want to mention as well.
Yes, and I just don't think we could have had the result without him. He's not local. His name is William Reichardt. He's from Fairfax, and he was brought in because he's one of the finest education attorneys that I know in the state to handle those aspects. And as it turned out, we brought him in as co-counsel to help me out with the jury trial, and he brilliantly handled some of the most difficult questioning in that trial because he was experienced criminal defense counsel as well. And I would say that I can't imagine necessarily the same outcome without him. He's a terrific lawyer.
Yeah, and Dave, I just want to ask you before you go, because we're getting ready to break for CBS News. You know, you've been involved in this for months since the very beginning, and from everything you've been able to read and the stuff that you've seen that we may never see because you were the lawyer on the case, was there a conspiracy to kill anyone or to bomb anything here in Albemarle County?
I've never seen any sign or evidence or anything that makes me believe there was a conspiracy. I don't think there's any evidence of it. The most that happened is the oldest kid was having fantasies. He was disturbed and wanted bad things to happen, but I don't think anybody ever took him seriously.
And it was just a matter of some other kids saying, hey, guess what so-and-so said?
Absolutely. And I'm not clear on what connection the well-known kid, the Newsom kid, had with this. And if anything, there were firecrackers seized and guns in a gun safe. And I'm not sure how they tied any of that into a conspiracy. I mean, firecrackers are what kids have.
Yeah, and I guess Jim Clambos was said, well, certainly there was something there because a judge found them all guilty originally.
Well, as far as my client is concerned, there's a big difference between being tried with your co-defendants and being tried on your own. And I think that was a significant difference. And I think the court was misled by some of the testimony.
Dave, I want to thank you for coming in today. Dave Heilberg with Dygert, Wright, Hobbs, and Heilberg. This interview will be archived in its entirety at SevillePodcast.com. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break for CBS News at the top of the hour. We'll be back with UPI reporter Dan Olmstead. This is Charlottesville right now.